between two hamadryads. But then the smaller snake began to die. There was nothing sudden about it. It was more like an airship going down, as the head sunk towards the ground, no longer capable of being carried by the neck, which was itself sagging inexorably lower. Something touched me on the shoulder.
"Stand aside, bro," said Dieterling.
It seemed like an age since I had left the car, but it could only have been half a minute. Dieterling could never have been far behind me, yet for most of that time Kaweya and I felt completely alone. I looked at what Dieterling was carrying, comparing it to the weapon I had imagined suitable for the task at hand.
"Nice one," I said. "The right tools for the job, that's all."
He brushed past me, shouldering the matte black bazooka he had retrieved from the weapons rack. There was a bas-relief scorpion down the side of it, and a huge semicircular magazine jutting asymmetrically from one side. A targeting screen whirred into place in front of his eyes, churning with scrolling data and bullseye overlays. Dieterling brushed it aside, glanced back to make sure I was out of range of the recoil blast, and squeezed the trigger. The first thing he did was blow a hole through the first snake, like a tunnel. Through this he walked, his boots squelching through the unspeakable red carpet. Kaweya pumped the last dart into the larger snake, but by then he was limited to doses calibrated for much smaller animals. It appeared not to notice that it had even been shot. They had, I knew, few pain receptors anywhere along their bodies. Dieterling reached him, his boots red to the knee. The adult was coming closer, its head no more than 10 meters from both of them. The two men shook hands and exchanged weapons. Dieterling turned his back on Kaweya and began to walk calmly back towards me. He carried the crossbow in the crook of his arm, for it was useless now. Kaweya hefted the bazooka and began to inflict grievous harm on the snake. It was not pretty. He had the bazooka set to rapid fire, mini-rockets streaking from its muzzle twice a second. What he did to the snake was more akin to pruning back a plant, snip by snip. First he took the head off, so that the truncated neck hung in the air, red-rimmed. But the creature kept on moving. Losing its brain was obviously not really much of a handicap to it. The slithering roar of its progress had not abated at all. So Kaweya kept shooting. He stood his ground, feet apart, squeezing rocket after rocket into the wound, blood and gore plastering the trees on either side of him. Still the snake kept coming, but now there was less and less of it to come, the body tapering towards the tail. When only 10 meters were left, the body finally flopped to the ground, twitching. Kaweya put a last rocket in it for good measure, and then turned round and walked back towards me with the same laconic stroll Dieterling had used. When he got close to me, I saw that his shirt was filmed in red now, his face slick with a fine film of rouge. He handed me the bazooka. I safed it, but it was hardly necessary. The last shot he had fired, I saw, had been the last in the magazine. Back at the vehicle, I opened the case which held the replacement magazines and slotted a fresh one onto the bazooka, then racked it with the other weapons. Kaweya was looking at me, as if expecting me to say something to him. But what could I say? I could hardly compliment him on his hunting expertise. Apart from the nerve it took and the physical strength to hold the bazooka, a child could have killed the snake in exactly the same manner. Instead, I looked to the two brutally butchered animals which lay across our path, practically unrecognizable for what they had been. "I don't think Vicuna could have helped us very much," I said. He looked at me, then shook